Thank you, brothers. Our scripture lesson is Genesis 37, verse 2 through verse 20, New International Version. And the text reads, "This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, 'Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it.' His brothers said to him, 'Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?' And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream. And he told it to his brothers. 'Listen,' he said, 'I had another dream. And this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me.' When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, 'What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?' His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, 'As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them.' 'Very well,' he replied. So he said to him, 'Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me.' Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, 'What are you looking for?' He replied, 'I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?' 'They have moved from here,' the man answered. 'I heard them say, let's go to Dothan.' Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But when they saw him in the distance and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. 'Here comes that dreamer,' they said to each other. 'Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams.'" The word of our God. The dream haters. One of the greatest speeches ever given was delivered by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during the March in Washington for Jobs and Freedom on August 28, 1963. In that speech, Dr. King called for civil and economic rights and an end to racism in the United States. The speech was delivered to more than 250,000 supporters from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. An excerpt from that speech has been etched into the collective memory of this nation. Listen to that excerpt. King says, "Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. What powerful, powerful words. And what a powerful dream. What a powerful message. It's still powerful even today. And despite the noble content of that message, Dr. King's dream was not shared by everyone. Most Americans at that time had no desire to see the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners sitting down together at the table of brotherhood, or little black boys and girls joining hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. So although it is a noble dream, and although it reflects the values stated in the documents that formed this nation, most folk at that time wanted no parts of the dream. In the crowd on that day, there were thousands of civil rights supporters, but across the nation, there were millions of detractors and what I call dream haters. And of course, you know, young people came up with that label hater a few years ago, and hateration and all that. So I don't know anything about it. Anyway, I just repeat what I hear the young folks say. Despite all of the progress and strides we've made in this nation, there are still those who want no part of a dream for freedom and inclusion. Now, let me hasten to say, there are a whole bunch of folk in this city, in this state, in this nation who are solidly in support of that dream. Not just black folk, folk across groups in this nation who are solidly in support. I want to make sure you know I know that. We're in the midst right now of hearings and court cases about the January 6th insurrection and all of the stuff that happened on that day when persons stormed the Capitol trying to stop the count of the certification of the election. And Congress is right now playing political football with the voting rights agenda. It seems like that should have been settled a long time ago. And here we are again with the same old story, the same old stuff over and over again. Some of this is because of the reckless rhetoric and policies of the previous administration. Because of that rhetoric, because of those policies, many have become brazen and emboldened by their hatred for King's dream. We've come a long way. But let us never forget the dream haters. In our text in Genesis 38, we are presented with a few dream haters. The story, in a compact way, presents some issues and episodes in the lives of Joseph and his brothers. According to the text, Joseph is despised by his brothers, the other sons of Jacob. They hate him so much that they can't even say a kind word to him. What is the source of this hatred? Why do they hate Joseph? Well, first, Joseph is a tattler. He gives bad reports to his father about his brothers. Now, you know, I call him a tattler, which is sort of tantamount to being a gossip. But is he really a tattler? We just read in the story where his father tells him, go see what's going on with the brothers and come back and give me a report. So not really tattling, he's just doing what his father said. But sometimes when you run your mouth too much, you don't win popularity contests. He's a tattler. Another reason for this hatred is Joseph is Jacob's. The text calls him Israel, but his name is also Jacob. Joseph is Jacob's favorite son. He's the favored child. And they know it. They know that he's favored. Jacob even gives Joseph a special coat, perhaps to indicate his privileged status. You know, and people always say, don't have a favorite. I got a favorite child. I tell different ones that come through, you're my favorite. It depends on what day it is. Regine's a favorite. The next day is Chantal. The next day is Brendan. It doesn't depend. I got favorites. I don't care what they say. They can get on Dr. Phil and work that out 20 years in the future. Joseph has two things. He has two things going against him. One, his brothers dislike the reports he has given to his father. They might be accurate reports, but, you know, they didn't like it. And Joseph is the favorite son. The big issue with Joseph is he is a dreamer. He receives special dreams about himself and about his family. And he has the temerity to share those dreams with his brothers. What thing to dream that you're special, that you're all that? It's another thing to go and tell everybody that you're special. So Joseph shares, the Bible says he had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, listen to the dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. It is these dreams that he had that ignited intense hatred toward Joseph. So there's a lot in this story. And I want to point out a few things. One thing, and these are not my points, I'm just going to point some stuff out. Joseph is much younger than his brothers. He's about 16, 17 years of age, teenager. So perhaps he's a little brash. Perhaps he's a little arrogant. You know, what teenager isn't brash and arrogant? And I can see how these reports make him unpopular with his brothers. He hasn't learned some of the brotherly lessons. You know, when you got older brothers, after a while they teach you some lessons of what you do, what you don't do, just like women teach their sisters and daughters lessons. Man, he didn't get these lessons yet, and so he messed up. But there are some serious issues in this story, in this saga between Joseph and his brothers. And one of those issues is the preferential treatment of Joseph disturbs his brothers. They are upset about this preferential treatment he's receiving. The text says, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made him an ornate robe. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. They know that he is the favored son. They know that Jacob gives Joseph special treatment, and they are jealous of that treatment. Now, this isn't on my paper. It just came back to me. I was talking to my older son, Brendan, about, you know, his reaction to the twins. You know, he was a baby for 3 years. Then the twins came along, and he was upset. He didn't want them in the house. He kept saying, why do you keep holding them? Why do you keep feeding them? You know, I wish you would take them back. I mean, he was upset. And I said, you're just jealous of these little babies. It was so funny. And you know what he told me? He told me, well, Daddy, when they were toddlers, I lured them into the bathtub and turned the hot water on. That's what the knucklehead told me yesterday. And I said, you did what to my babies? I wanted to snatch him. I mean, it was 30-some years ago, but I mean, so sometimes when you think somebody's getting preferential treatment, you go to great lengths to try to counter that. So they didn't want Joseph to get what they were not getting. They didn't want Joseph to get what they were not getting. You might even infer that they want to get the treatment from the daddy and deny Joseph the treatment. Some people don't want you to have the treatment they wanted, but they want to block you from access to that treatment. And for many dream haters, the issue is about treatment and preferences. Treatment and preferences comes front and center, and it's different for those who hate Dr. King's dream. And the reason it's different is they have preferential treatment. Help me, Holy Ghost. They already have preferential treatment, and they just don't want to extend that same treatment to everyone else. They only want it for themselves. When Trump was running for president, a lot of folk were chanting, "Let's take our country back." And I kept saying to myself, whose country? Because you know, that's why they don't want you to tell the truth about history. Whose country? And who is included in that word, our? Who is the our that is taking our country back? That's the mentality to fuel the assault on the Capitol. It's a mentality that says, this nation belongs to us, and we're the only ones who get preferential treatment in this country. The late Toni Morrison said, so scary are the consequences of a collapse of white privilege that many Americans have flocked to a political platform that supports and translates violence against the defenseless as strength. These people are not so much angry as terrified with the kind of terror that makes knees tremble. And though these brothers were upset about preferential treatment, they didn't want Joseph to get something they thought they should have, not Joseph. They didn't want to lose their privilege to Joseph. Another thing in the story that sticks out for me is the fear of Joseph's ascendancy, that he will go up and be preeminent, he will ascend. The fear of his ascendancy. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding the sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed to the ground. His brothers said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. The brothers don't want Joseph to have authority over them. They don't want Joseph to supplant them and their place. They to them, this dream highlights the ascendancy of Joseph. They want no parts of a scenario in which Joseph is in charge over them. Their hate is rooted in their desire to preserve their own status. That's what it is with some dream haters. These brothers don't want Joseph to have power or preeminence. In other words, little brother isn't going to outrank us. And sometimes the whole issue is about who is running the ship. And somebody has said only certain folk who look a certain way can run the ship. And certain folk who look a certain way have no right to run the ship. I think that's part of the issue with those haters of Dr. King's dream. Folks simply don't want to share power, share status, and share position. And they think that their values and cultural standards should shape what everyone else does. And anything different is seen as a threat. Now, I'm going to share a story about, they didn't know my paper also, about my brother. So we went out to a restaurant when I visited him in South Carolina, his wife. And the restaurant, you get some fries. They get some seasoned fries. And the fries came to the table in a bag. And then there were little cups of seasoning different. And I had ordered one kind of seasoning. His wife ordered another kind and everything. And so when we after we got the food, I took the bag and and started taking some out, not with my hand, but, you know, taking some out and putting it into my saucer. I'm sort of OCD. I'm not dipping in the bag with everybody. So I started taking some out, and then I took some of the container of the season, and I started sprinkling it on my fries. My brother said to me, he said, "Ricky, you're not supposed to do it that way. You're supposed to put the seasoning in the bag and shake it up and then get the fries out." I said, "Yeah, that's your rule. That's your system. I have my own system. And my system is, I don't know if I like the seasoning. So I'm going to get a few fries out and put some seasoning on the fries and see if I like it before I put it in the whole bag." He doesn't watch this service. Anyway, but the point is, sometimes we have our expectations and our values and our systems and how things should go, and that's all right for you. That's all right for your family. That's all right for your household. But you cannot take your values and your system and how you think it should go and impose that as the standard for everybody else in the world. And that's what this thing about ascendancy is all about. They don't want certain people to run the ship. Let me give my other illustration. I'm almost through. I can remember during inauguration day for the first Obama term, I was happy, I was proud, but I was on edge the whole day. When President Mrs. Obama walked outside the limo, I was on edge the whole time, and I kept praying, "Lord, protect them. Don't let some lunatic do something crazy. Don't let their children see something tragic on this day." And part of that prayer stemmed from the existence of this country of persons, dream haters who don't want to see you win. There are folk who don't want you included just because of what you look like. There are folk who will do stuff because they don't want your ascendancy. James Baldwin said, "We can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and my right to exist." They didn't like his ascendancy. And then one more thing, and I'm done. I'm going to say something. There's a danger. With dream haters. As the text says, they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." The text presents this hatred as serious and entrenched. The brothers are so angry, they plot to kill Joseph. They want to ensure that Joseph never gains status over them. They spell it out. "We'll see what comes of his dreams." Their thinking is killing Joseph will ensure that the dream never comes to fruition. That it never comes, that's some serious hatred. And Dr. King spoke about the perils of hatred. He wrote, "Like an unchecked cancer, hate corrodes the personality and eats away at its vital unity. Hate destroys a man's sense of values and his objectivity. It causes him to describe the beautiful as ugly and the ugly as beautiful, and to confuse the true with the false and the false with the true." What words about hatred? And you can see the corrosion taking place in Joseph's brother. They go from not speaking to him to plotting murder, and they become dangerous. And we've seen how dangerous hatred can be, beloved. Take these dream haters seriously. I'm so glad that the jury in the Ahmaud Arbery trial was not fooled by the defense arguments. They saw through them and convicted the accused. They saw in the actions of those murderers not concern for the neighborhood, but dream haters whose view of life and community does not include certain folk. They saw men blinded by hate that they confused the true with the false. And I'm glad they saw through it and said, this isn't about that. It's about this over here. When I told you when I was in South Carolina, my brother, we were driving past a huge, beautiful home, and he pointed out a sign in the yard, big old sign that read, Trump won. And this is a year after the election. Talk about calling the truth false and the false true. There are those who have the gall to suggest that the election was stolen, and state legislatures across this country have passed voting laws built upon the premise of falsehood. They say it's to ensure that no one cheats. The reality is dream haters continue to exist, and they are dangerous, beloved. We are here today with the freedoms we enjoy, with the things we have achieved, because killing the dreamer doesn't necessarily block the fulfillment of the dream. And Joseph's brothers learned that lesson. They thought they had put an end to Joseph, but the Bible says what they meant for bad, God meant for good. Our dreamer, Martin Luther King, was brutally murdered, but the dream continues. That's why we're here right now. We're here to say King's dream is powerful because it is rooted in justice and righteousness. It speaks to what God intends for humanity. We are here to say, like God said, justice ought to run down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. We have to confront and counter the work of dream haters, whether it's voting rights, whether it's the right to marry, whether it's the right to pray in a church, a mosque, or a synagogue. We must counter the destructive tendencies of the dream haters. And we must hold people accountable for their actions and their choices. And that's why voting is so important. That's why speaking out is so important. And listen, beloved, those of us who understand injustice and racism and discrimination ought not be in the camps of those who are blocking the inclusion and the ascendancy of other people. Might say, we start waxing religious and say, oh, I don't agree with that, because they waxed religious to justify slavery in this country. They waxed religious to justify Jim Crow in this country. We had better be careful and stand on the side of human rights. Stand on the side of inclusion for everybody. We must take a stand for diversity, inclusion, and justice for all. And don't let the dream haters get you weary. Keep on fighting. And I don't care how many marches you see on television. I don't care how many people dressed in military gear are threatening in the streets of this country. Don't let them get you weary. Keep on fighting. I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought us this far to leave us now. Look at all that you've accomplished across groups. Look at all you've achieved despite these dream haters. Look at everything you've built despite these dream haters. Keep on fighting and keep on pushing and keep on marching. I want to extend the invitation to Jesus Christ. It was the religion of Jesus that transformed Martin's life and lived out their faith. It was a religion nurtured through his study and experiences. And it's that religion that holds us together. It is that Jesus, the Jesus of the disinherited, that we offer to you right now. Will you stand with me in the sanctuary? We invite you to come. Oh, my brother, we bless you. God bless you. Just before the benediction, and the benediction will just be, "We shall overcome." And I'll let that song be our benedictory blessing. Just want to say I'm happy to see Brother Fowler here. I've been praying for him, his wife, and Sister Roan, for her aunt who passed away, praying for you all. So good to see some of our families that we've been praying for worshiping with us today. All right. So you were standing just a second ago, and then I made you sit, and I'm going to ask you to stand again. And I know for some it's not that easy, down and up, while you stand. We shall overcome. If you're near somebody, you can hold hands and rock with them. We shall overcome.
We shall overcome.
Ushers, you can go ahead and have them exit. Will you be seated? The usher will come to your row and help you exit.